This is Diana Cordy with Book Talk. My guest is Joshua Jay, author of 7 books. His newest is How Magicians Think, Misdirection, Deception, and Why Magic Matters. This book is my love letter to magic, says Jay, and it answers the questions people ask me every night after the show. It's divided into 52 essays, same number as a deck of cards. He averages 300 days each year performing and watching other masters at work. Joshua, welcome to Book Talk.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Do all magicians start early in their lives with magic like you did?
No, that's the thing that's so amazing is I think that every kid is fascinated by magic. Historically, it's typically been little boys, but now I think we're finding it's both genders and people of all walks of life get into magic, but they tend to get out of magic when they discover sports or dating or their jobs or school or whatever it is. Those of us who remain just never quit. But the beautiful thing is, you know, there's a magic community all over the world, and I meet people all the time who take up magic in retirement, for example, or take up magic midlife, or have it as a hobby that they don't get serious about until, you know, the end of their careers. And because magic is the art of concealing art, we conceal what it is we're doing. It isn't like painting or baseball or other hobbies where your skill is apparent to the public watching you. We conceal our skill. So in some sense, you don't have to do magic for 30 years to do it proficiently.
What is a typical day in your life as a magician?
That's the thing. There really is no typical day. The career that I've carved out for myself is so exciting because it's so different. So, for example, I co-run with my best friend a magic company that supplies tricks and tutorials to other magicians. So, for example, this morning, I woke up and had team meetings about magic products that we're putting out. And in a couple days' time, I'll go down to Columbus, Ohio to run a huge conference, one of the largest and oldest in the country that we now own and operate, that's a convention for other magicians. Last week, I was in Spain performing. The week before that, I was in Serbia performing. The week before that, I was in Montana performing. I am currently writing another project, so I am writing between all these things. So there's all these different ways that I'm expressing myself through magic. Sometimes it's writing, sometimes it's meeting, sometimes it's performing, and it just depends on the day.
Who's your toughest audience?
You know, in the book, I talk about this and How Magicians Think. I do a whole chapter on the toughest audience, and you'd think that it would be rocket scientists. You'd think that it would be, you know, people with advanced degrees or wise people or even older magicians who've seen it all. But the toughest audience in many ways is children. And that's counterintuitive because I think that the reason the kids are so hard to fool is because they don't come with the same assumptions to a magic show that adults do. You see me shuffling a deck of cards, you assume, correctly or incorrectly, that that is a normal off-the-shelf deck. A kid would say, hey, can I see that deck? If I say, hey, can I borrow a coin? People say, okay, borrowed coin, what are you going to do with it? A kid might say, hey, show me your hands empty before you do anything. I didn't see your hands empty. An adult sees something floating and they say, wow, that's impossible. I don't know how that works. A kid says, well, just because I can't see if there are wires doesn't mean there aren't wires there. So there are all sorts of things that kids don't assume that adults do, and that makes it really difficult. There's a great children's magician by the name of David Kaye. He goes by Silly Billy when he performs. And he wrote a fantastic book in which he said that for adults, it's all about amazement. It's all about astonishment. But for kids, it's about interaction, interactions per minute. So what kids need out of a magic show is inherently different than what adults need out of a magic show. And that also probably contributes to why kids are so hard to perform for.
Do you have a special show you do just for kids?
I don't. I grew up, and I'm so glad that I did, I grew up performing kids' magic. And a lot of magicians today don't do that. They never did magic for kids, and so they don't have that in their wheelhouse. I am so glad that I spent a decade of my life doing kids' shows for screaming, crying children and gymnasiums and school halls and everything else, because it teaches you a lot about audience management. I don't do it anymore because there are specialists who do it better than I can. And it's really not my interest and focus because of just what I said, that for kids, it's not about being amazing. It's about getting reactions and asking them to shout ahead and tell you the magic words and throw things from the audience to the stage. And that's just not my thing.
How do you know who to call up from the audience to help you when you're doing a show?
Yeah, I mean, this is a great question that most people would never think about. And these are the kind of questions that I try to answer in my book, the kinds of things that most people don't think about. And it doesn't matter if you like magic or you're ever going to be a magician. These kinds of questions are just fascinating to think about because of the implications for other walks of life. So I often say, this is a line directly from one of my tricks that is, you know, you think of magic shows as something you watch the magician do. But as a magician, I'm watching you back. And that really plays a role in whoever I invite on stage. It really just depends. Do I want somebody confident? Are they making good eye contact? Do I want somebody who's just going to follow directions? Do I want somebody who may not be able to see the card that they pick because they're not wearing glasses and they should be? Or, you know, there are all sorts of things that go into choosing a volunteer. And I am auditioning people, so to speak, in my head when I'm doing those early tricks that I do.
Do you have a favorite audience?
I like any audience that is focused on magic and is there to enjoy a show. In other words, I'm often the after-dinner entertainment for a corporate function. They don't know my name. They don't know who I am. They didn't know I was going to be there. And they can be a nice audience, sometimes really good, but they can also be drunk. They can also be distracted. They can also be upset because they thought they were leaving after dinner or that the DJ was starting. When somebody is coming to see a magic show and they're sober, and they're excited to watch it, and they know that they were coming to see that magic show, they tend to be primed to enjoy it the most.
How do you build a magic show?
That's a tough thing to answer quickly, but you build a magic show through empathy, right? So you start by thinking about, would your audience be amazed by? What do you want to express and instill in the audience? And you go from there, and you try to construct magic that appeals to those emotions. That's how I go about it.
What are your three wishes for the future of magic?
Well, you've skipped to the end of my book there. I don't want to actually tip too much of that section. I want the readers to discover that for themselves, but I'll share one. One of my wishes for magic is that the next great magician be a female and possibly be somebody of color. I think it's time. I think that the world is ready for that and that magic has embraced white males for far long enough. And there's an old, America can only embrace one magician at a time. I don't know how true that is, but historically it's more or less been true. You know, you have Houdini up through Keller, Blackstone, Doug Henning, then to David Copperfield, then to David Blaine, and now it's sort of in flux. But the idea is that I hope that magic can be viewed as a much more inclusive place than it has in the past. You know, if you ask the average person on the street to name 10 magicians, how many females can they name? How many non-white magicians can they name? And that lack of diversity reflects poorly on our industry. And I know we're a much more inclusive place now than we were, and I just hope that to see us that way.
What do you hope readers get from your book?
My goal when I wrote this book was to deepen people's appreciation for magic and for magicians. I hope that they don't view this as some isolated deep dive into an art form they know very little about, but instead that they view it like I view anything. I read books on writing, even though I don't write full time. I read books on art, even though I'm not an artist. There are so many lessons that magicians can teach us to make our lives better, to enrich us in whatever walk of life we do.
Well, thank you. My guest is Joshua Jay, author of How Magicians Think, Misdirection, Deception, and Why Magic Matters, published by Workman Press. This is Diana Cordy with Book Talk. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.